Radio Prague News. The government has approved a budget for 2010 with a deficit of 230 billion crowns. The Czech president has voiced his support for measures proposed by the interim cabinet to cut next year's budget deficit by up to 70 billion crowns, and the Czech Constitutional Court is considering whether early elections scheduled for next month are in line with Czech law and should therefore go ahead. The government approved a budget for 2010 on Wednesday night with a deficit of 230 billion crowns, which is around 13.1 billion US dollars. A package which would lower the deficit to around 160 billion crowns will be finalised next week, Czech Prime Minister Jan Fischer said. The set of proposals would drastically cut government expenditure and raise taxes in certain areas, Finance Minister Eduard Janota has told journalists. Mr. Janota has previously warned that if next year's state deficit is not curbed, the Czech Republic will find itself in a dire financial situation. On Thursday morning, Czech President Václav Klaus voiced his support for the set of measures proposed by Jan Fischer's cabinet to cut next year's budget deficit by around 70 billion crowns, 4 billion US dollars. At a meeting with the Prime Minister at Prague Castle on Thursday, Mr. Klaus was reported to have said that he understood why the government was wanting to cut expenditure and raise certain taxes. According to Prime Minister Jan Fischer, Mr. Klaus said that he believed such a package was the only way to rationally maintain the country's economic health in the course of the coming year. The government will debate Mr. Fischer's set of proposals next Wednesday. The Constitutional Court is in recess after a public hearing on Thursday morning to consider whether early elections, scheduled for October the 9th and 10th, are in line with Czech law and should therefore go ahead. Last week, the court overruled a presidential decree setting a term for early elections, saying it needed more time to consider the complaint of one lawmaker, Miloš Milčák, who claimed he had a constitutional right to serve out his mandate in full. All of the main political parties spoke out against the Constitutional Court's injunction last week. A ruling is expected at 4 p.m. Central European time on Thursday afternoon. Milan Baroš struck four times to help the Czech Republic give their World Cup qualification hopes a lift with a 7-0 win over San Marino on Wednesday. Václav Svěrkoš scored two and Tomáš Nedzid bagged one to complete a victory that leaves the Czechs with 12 points from 8 matches in Group 3 and still with a chance of qualification. Slovakia topped the group with 16 points from 7 games, heading into their match away to second place Northern Ireland, who have 14 points from 8 games. Poland and Slovenia are also in the running in a tight group, with only the winners qualifying for South Africa 2010 directly. And now on to the weather. It will remain mostly sunny over the next couple of days, with the occasional rain shower and temperatures ranging between 18 and 24 degrees Celsius. I'm Rosie Johnston, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague and I'm Ian Willoughby. Thank you for joining us. Today, the government approves next year's budget and a whopping great deficit. But will political uncertainty scotch the cabinet's proposals to cut spending? Plans for a new centre to help Czech crayfish fight off the American crayfish that have overrun rivers in this country.
Main problem with the American species is that they are less sensitive to the crayfish plague, but they carry it.
And in From the Archives, President Václav Havel welcomes Pope John Paul II and musician Frank Zappa to Prague Castle. All that and more is coming up, so do please stay with us. The Czech government has just approved a draft budget for 2010 that includes a record deficit of 230 billion Czech crowns. That's over 13 billion US dollars. The caretaker cabinet has also been debating measures that could save around 70 billion crowns. But with elections set for later this year, the main Czech parties have shown little enthusiasm for the government's proposals. My colleague Jan Richter has been following developments and joins me here now in the studio. Jan, can you tell us how likely is it that we will have a record deficit next year?
It's very likely, Ian, and it might be even higher and much higher if it comes to the worst than the estimated 230 billion One of the main reasons, of course, is that the Czech economy has plunged by record numbers. It was 5.5% year-on-year in the second quarter of this year. And that, of course, means that the budget's income side will be much lower than originally expected. So, yes, the Czech Republic will next year very probably work with a budget that has not been seen before. Now, if you think that that's the worst news, well, it isn't, because our listeners might know that the Constitutional Court postponed the early general elections. And Prime Minister Jan Fischer warned yesterday that if the elections are not held as planned, which means the first week of October, the new Chamber of Deputies will not have time to approve the budget and the country will have to work with a stopgap budget. That would mean that this year's budget would be used next year as well. And that would most likely result in an even higher deficit. And experts and analysts do not dare to estimate at the moment how high that could be.
So what are the measures that the government is proposing to help cut the budget deficit?
Finance Minister Eduard Janota has put together a package, really, that should bring the budget down by some 70 billion crowns. These measures should raise income by some 33 billion on one hand and reduce spending by another 38 billion on the other. One of the ways of increasing the income is raising VAT levels by a couple of percentage points. Also, the government is planning to double real estate tax, raise the consumer tax on petrol, diesel, tobacco and alcohol. And as far as cutting the state spending is concerned, the finance ministry would like to cut on social benefits, on state support for building savings and other support, and also to take some controversial steps such as freezing the retirement pensions and salaries of state employees. Now, if all this is approved, the situation would improve significantly. But again, there is a catch, because the general elections are coming sooner or later this year. And even though some parties support these ideas, it's questionable that the current lower house would approve them, not without lengthy debates, which is really the last thing the budget needs.
So when will it be clear what the shape of next year's budget is going to be?
Well, that's a good question. And also, it's probably the most difficult one, because, as you know, there is a big uncertainty about the date of the elections and therefore about when the next lower house and government will take office. We'll know more later today, after the Constitutional Court reaches a verdict about whether the elections can be held as planned. But it is very likely that the elections will take place sometime in November, and the time is running out fast.
Okay, thank you for that, Jan Richter. We will, of course, be following developments as regards the budget and the elections. One way to ensure you're in the picture is to sign up for our daily news email at our website, radio.cz. Now, Czech crayfish are in trouble, and a new multi-million crown research centre is coming to their rescue. The project aims to reduce the threat of rival crayfish species brought here from America and restore the indigenous population, while at the same time being of practical benefit to the water system. Christian Falvey has the story.
The American crayfish was originally introduced in Europe as a restocking measure because it was immune to a serious disease that killed off much of the native European crayfish population. Its effect, however, was to wreak havoc in Czech streams and ponds, as the director of the Research Institute for Fish Culture and Hydrobiology, Pavel Kozak, told me.
Very quickly, they reproduce and grow more rapidly. And main problem with the American species is that they are less sensitive to the crayfish plague, but they carry it. So they carry the problem which caused the native crayfish mortality.
Now, a new research center under the auspices of the University of South Bohemia is beginning a major project to confront that problem. The center will take 2 years to complete and will cost 370 million crowns, largely paid for through EU funding. The crayfish issue will be at the top of its agenda.
The main research now is focused on restocking of native crayfish to the new localities and to make some ARC localities for the native crayfish. So protection of native crayfish and try to eliminate the negative impact of the non-native species.
Crayfish play a large role in freshwater habitats, being both major predators and important prey. They purify water by eating dead matter, and their sensitivity to the quality of the water provides other benefits to man.
They have very good receptors to sense any changes in water quality. And we have systems which could record their heart activity and heart activity changes. So we can make the equipment which will say to us if the water quality is good or changes.
The Hydrobiology Institute has already been working with the Shumava National Park for the last 9 years, monitoring the crayfish population and looking for an appropriate location for a sanctuary where they will be safe from the non-native species. But crayfish will not, of course, be the only subject of the new research center.
One part is the crayfish research. There are another aims like fish meat quality, technology of caviar production and innovation of monitoring systems for water quality.
The introduction of New World plants and animals very often causes large problems in the Czech Republic as elsewhere. The jellyfish like Pectinatella arrived here only 6 years ago and has spread across the country, while a small American crustacean has destroyed native microinvertebrates all over Europe. The new Hydrobiology Center will be only one of many projects dealing with this issue in the Czech Republic.
Thank you very much, Christian Falvey. Now it's time, as every Thursday, for From the Archives with David Vaughan.
During Václav Havel's first year as Czechoslovak president, Prague Castle saw a string of visitors from around the world. And they didn't just include heads of state and other political dignitaries.
While I was down in WDC, certain folks were not glad to see me.
On January the 21st, 1990, one of the first foreign guests to be received by the new president was none other than the legendary American rock musician, Frank Zappa, who had been one of the inspirations for the Czech underground in the 1970s and 80s, including Havel himself.
Doesn't seem to be too unusual to me.
May I ask, will you be in the United States during our state visit there?
Yes, I will.
A few snippets of his conversation with President Havel survive in our archives. At one point, the ever-rebellious Zappa commented ironically that he would never be likely to be granted an audience with his own president.
It would have been impossible for me in my own country to walk in and talk to George Bush. Impossible.
Exactly 3 months later, President Havel welcomed a very different guest, Pope John Paul II. Amid rain and thunderstorms, several hundred thousand people attended Mass in Letnar Park, a place that had played a central role in the Velvet Revolution just 6 months before. The Pope also led Mass in St. Vitus Cathedral, addressing the congregation for nearly an hour in fluent Czech. I am meeting you, he said, in a cathedral which is the spiritual heart not just of this city and the Prague Archdiocese, but in a sense of your whole country. Built above the tombs of your saints, it is a living symbol of the history of the Church in your nation, a history which is continuing through you. But the Pope was addressing a divided church. Under communism, some priests had compromised with the regime, while others had worked in secret, refusing to have anything to do with the communist-approved official structures of the church in Czechoslovakia. Mistrust remained, and the Pope was keen not to alienate those who had worked underground, but at the same time to re-establish the authority of the church hierarchy. Some people, he said, in order to remain in the service of their fellow believers, allowed the former regime to force a kind of modus vivendi upon them that not everyone agreed with. Dear brothers, please forget that bondage of which you are victims, and with pastoral sensitivity renew the church in full unity under the leadership of your bishops.
Obnovte plnou jednotu presbyteria pod vedením biskupa.
This was a clear reminder to the clergy to respect the authority of the Vatican. But John Paul II argued that a more serious division was that between the Catholic Church and the Czech nation itself. This is a divide that it has proved rather harder to heal.
A účast Ducha Svatého buď s vámi se všim. Amen.
The Pope was to visit the Czech Republic twice more in 1995 and 1997. But neither visit aroused quite the enthusiasm of his first trip, just months after the fall of communism. John Paul II's successor, Benedict XVI, will be coming to this country at the end of this month, and will join in the celebrations of the Czech patron, St. Wenceslas.
From the Archives was written and presented by David Vaughan. If you've just joined us, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. In just over 2 months' time, Radio Prague will be marking one of the most momentous events in Czech history, and we'd like you to get involved.
Now hundreds of thousands of Czechoslovaks.
November 17th of 1989 set in motion the Velvet Revolution, which led to the peaceful overthrow of the communist regime in Czechoslovakia, following a brutal police crackdown on an unarmed student demonstration in Prague on that day. Thousands of people took to the streets, asserting their desire for change.
Were chanted the names of Dubček and Havel in when
thousands of Czechoslovaks.
Do you recall the mass protests in the streets of Prague and the election of dissident playwright Václav Havel, the country's first post-communist president? On the 20th anniversary of the fall of communism, Radio Prague is asking its listeners the world over to share their memories of those heady days. Write and let us know where and how you heard the news and how you were affected by it. Radio Prague will select the best letters and interview the listeners in question over the phone. Their memories will enhance Radio Prague's special programming devoted to the 20th anniversary of the Velvet Revolution. Please send your letters to Vinohradská 12, postal code 12099, Prague, the Czech Republic, or you can email us at cr@radio.cz. And don't forget to include a phone number where you can be reached. Twenty years after, your memories on Radio Prague.
In the last part of our program today, here's another chance to hear an interview that I did with the historian Milan Hauner. Milan Hauner is a leading Czech historian whose area of expertise is World War II, Germany, and Czech-German relations. He himself was born during the war in 1940 to a Czech-German couple who were both deaf. In this edition of Panorama, Professor Hauner, who teaches at the University of Wisconsin, outlines aspects of his own fascinating family history, starting with his grandfather, Wilhelm Julius Hauner, a leading military historian, translator, and anti-Nazi journalist.
When Heydrich came to this country, he was arrested because he maintained close links with the Czech military, then, of course, out of retired and forced retirement, but still organized in the underground because the Czech military formed the first underground line of resistance or opposition to Nazi occupation. So obviously he had many friends among them and remained in contact. So he was sent to the worst concentration camp in the Nazi system in Austria, Mauthausen. And the official entry into the Todesbuch of Mauthausen is auf der Flucht erschossen, which means shot while attempting to escape, which is absolute nonsense. He was 64 years old and they smashed his glasses during the interrogation. He couldn't see. He would be the last person to attempt to run against the electric wire. So they got rid of him, as I learned later, because he stood in the way. They needed to clear the barrack number 13 for incoming Russian prisoners of war, and the commandant just crossed, you know, old people who couldn't work in the quarry as superfluent, and so he died. And my uncle, his son, died after the attempt on Heydrich's life, shot during martial law here in Prague in early June 1942.
As well as killing his grandfather and uncle, the Nazis brought Milan Hauner's parents together. But for one of their many heinous policies, the couple might never have married.
My mother was German, but not Sudeten German. She lived in the center of Germany, in Thuringia. And she escaped. My father saved her life because she wanted to kill herself due to the brutal Nazi dealing with people who were handicapped because of their illness or some health problem. And she was earmarked for sterilization. And there was only one in little print in the verdict. This is a chapter which very few people know, that people who were married to foreigners, that these laws would not be applied to them as to the rest of the German citizens. So my mother, who was in, who knew my father, and my father was very much in love with her, but she resisted his temptation until... And then obviously she asked him, "Would you like to marry me?" He said, "Yes, instantly, but you must come tomorrow, otherwise something terrible happens." And he came and saved her. So it was quite incredible. So even this cruel history had its romance. And thanks to that, I'm here. And so my brother. The handicap probably saved my life, because otherwise my parents would be active in political underground and executed just like my grandfather or my uncle.
Professor Hauner's father, Wilhelm Bohumir Hauner, who lived from 1903 to 1982, was one of Czechoslovakia's leading bookbinders.
He was a master binder, and particularly his specialty was, I forgot the English word, you must help me, zlacení, that means engraving, here is the word. And he worked with gold a lot, because it's real gold, a very thin folio, which are used for doing titles but larger images and pictures in leather. So that was his specialty. He was brilliant. He was one of the best Czech bookbinders. But after the communist takeover, his profession and so many of his colleagues was dying, because there was no market for hand-bound books. Only a few poets or bibliophiles, people collecting books, like Jaroslav Seifer, the poet. My father was telling me about it. He used to come to his workshop and ask for special binding of his poems and so on.
Finally, going back in time somewhat, Milan Hauner's grandmother, Jitka Haunerova Stankova, was also a remarkable person. She played a leading role in the establishment of a school for deaf and dumb children on Prague's Stepanska Street, which opened its doors in 1917. Fate had led to her becoming an expert in the field.
She was, of course, shocked. My father was her first child, and when he lost his hearing due to meningitis, she devoted her fortune and her time to travelling abroad, inspecting the most advanced method for teaching deaf children in France and in Germany. And she imported these methods here and introduced them as member of the board. She made sure that the Czech teachers adopted the most advanced methods. So Czech deaf children were lucky to get into, and all of them were lucky to have this education, were used this combined methods, which consisted of the usual way of using sign language, which is natural. And then, of course, my parents used that too. But in addition, in order to communicate with the world of normal people with normal hearing, they learned how to speak. The blurred language became clearer through systematic phonetic education, and they were also taught lip reading. So that was our preferred method at home, and they were very good at that. And when my father, who knew languages and was a secretary of the Czechoslovak Deaf Union, the organization of Czechoslovak Deaf, was invited to the United States in 1928, I think it was, and introduced to the president of the Gallaudet College, which is the first university of the deaf people in the United States, in Washington, he was surprised that, you know, their methods were based exclusively, and still are nowadays, on sign language. So American deaf people don't know how to communicate with people with normal, unless these people can use sign language, because they don't, they are not taught lip reading, they are not taught how to speak. So my father was quite astonished, because that cuts out, you know, they live, they are special, they live in their own enclosure, in their own small world, without needing the contact with, which is not good, I think. It's unnatural.
That edition of Panorama, featuring the historian Milan Hauner, was first broadcast in November last year. And it brings us to the end of today's program on Radio Prague. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from myself, Ian Willoughby, and all of us here in Prague, thank you for listening, and goodbye.